Hello, this is a show from Radio. We're a group of stations bringing new and forgotten ways of making radio to our listeners. Each week, we give artists the challenge to make radio that works across the whole of Europe and beyond. Are you up for it?
To learn a new skill than to just throw yourself in at the deep end and do it. This is the beginning of a new and exciting world for me. It's the world of sound. The world of sound in Brussels and, in particular, the sound of the city. I'm about to follow a one-week workshop with renowned sound recordist and artist Chris Watson. My desire is to move into the realm of sound installation. And what better way to learn about that than to follow a workshop with one of the most regarded sound artists in the field? I was lucky enough to be able to be given this opportunity to make an audio diary for you and, well, for myself, of course, and learn the skills that are required in order to make this radio piece. My experience with sound production has been mostly in the capacity of performer and vocalist and voice artist, so I know more about those mediums of sound. However, what I wanted to do was to learn how to make a piece technically and artistically and how to make radio plays in general. So I'm following this workshop along with the students of the Ritz Radio program, and I'm looking forward to discovering our sounds of the city. Day one, Chapelle Station, 28th of October 2010. One of my goals or ambitions for this workshop was to try and work with consumer technology, i.e. iPhones, mini discs, so on and so forth. But I soon found out by working with that over the first few days that it was very difficult once you'd work with better materials to utilize the iPhone to pick up a better sound quality of what I needed for this particular documentation of the workshop. Very quickly realize that there are so many sounds of the city and they never cease to exist. They're all around us at all given times. Not only in the city do we find sound. We soon learned during this week that it's very difficult to tune your ears out from the sounds that come in. As we have eyelids, we certainly don't have ear lids, and sound comes in involuntarily. Day one was a bit of a getting to know you introductory day, understanding where Chris comes from, what he does, But better not me talk about that. Let's let him do it for himself.
I didn't. I actually started in sound because my parents bought me a gift, an inspired gift, when I was 11 or 12, of a small portable tape recorder. And I recorded everything in the house. And then realised, because it had batteries in it, I could take it outside. So eventually, I used to look at the bird table through our kitchen window and watch the birds feeding, but it was like watching a silent film. So I realised in the end I could go outside, put some food on the table, but also my microphone on the bird table, hang my little recorder from underneath, set it recording, and run back inside. So the birds would return and start feeding, which you could watch them, but now I was also recording them in very close, intimate detail. So then I'd run out. I ran out before the tape ran out, and then brought this little tape back and put it back on. And I like to think I can remember this sort of moment of eavesdropping into this secret world of sounds which we were not normally privileged to hear, and just being blown away by it, and thinking, I'd made this amazing discovery. So I've really been, you know, if it's not too crass, on this sort of journey ever since, you know, investigating.
Day one afternoon, Chapelle Station, Capellekirk. I feel the vibrations. I can hear the sounds so present, and the vibrations of the train. Right behind me as I'm recording this. Chris and the students of the Ritz came to the station platforms and decided to capture sounds of the trains, which is an area of interest of Chris's. This is one of the areas in Brussels that we looked at over the course of the last 5 days.
Because I got a tape recorder, I then discovered when I was 15 or 16 maybe, that you could use a tape recorder in a musical way. So I discovered Musique Concrète and the work of Pierre Schaeffer and the people at Radio France, and became fascinated by that the musical application of tape recorders and sound in collage. And so I became really interested in that and ended up in a band, and then for quite a few years, and then veered back into wanting to start working with location sound. And the only way I thought I could achieve that at the time and get out of music, that sort of trap of music recording, was to try and learn about film sound post-production. So I started work at a television company in the northeast of England, and again was really drawn into that whole aspect of film sound. And I still work like that now, even though I don't often work with film and sound. In terms of compositional terms, I think filmically in how I work. Well, I'd actually studied telecommunications before I sort of dropped out of all that. So I had a grasp of electronics. And the television station, I learned the sort of practical aspects. So it was great. You went out on location as an assistant in those days, and you learned the trade, if you like. And then I watched people in post-production, like students are doing now, you know. And then I got access to the equipment myself and started working with it. So then you learn how to apply it and how you want to work. So that was really useful. And I left eventually and became freelance.
And so how have you diversified exactly? And how is it possible to do this? Why is it possible to do this?
Oh, I think sound's very flexible, which is one of the things I enjoy about it. So a sound that I record for a television documentary, I can use in a feature film or a radio production or a computer game or an installation, so that you can apply the same sounds across lots of different mediums and formats, which is fascinating. You know, you can't do that with a two-dimensional image really in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And sound also then takes your imagination on these amazing journeys. So I find it relatively simple to move in between all these different mediums, which is really quite exciting. You know, it drives my... I'm not really goal-oriented in terms of a career. It's just... it's great to have all these opportunities and avenues, and sound enables me to do that.
Wild tracks. What are they and how do you make them?
Wild tracks are a non-synchronous sound recording.
Mm.
So probably a better name for my purpose is atmospheres, because I work outside on location. So I use the word atmospheres. Atmospheres should embody a sense of place, but there's a couple of technical considerations. And the first one is they have a small dynamic range, so they don't intrude or impinge upon other recordings that you might want to layer them with. So if I shut up for 5 seconds, this will be an atmosphere. So that idea of distant conversations from the office here at QO2 and somebody walking past outside, there's a sense of ambience, but it's not loud, and it's not like the sound of my voice now. It's relatively distant from the microphone. I mean, perspective's important. And they're very useful tools, because you would lay that underneath in here, something like this interview you're doing with me, and it covers the edits. So when you edit my voice, any jumps in the background are smoothed out by the addition of an atmosphere or wild track layer running underneath. So technically they're really useful, but they mustn't break out of this idea of the dynamics going louder and quieter. Waves on the beach, and you know, there's lots of interesting things, but they all had that commonality, like I was talking about before, in that they're effectively rich harmonic sounds with a small dynamic, like the way we're here before we're even born.
Thank you.
start hearing at 16 weeks in a womb.
Mm.
And do you think that that has a big impact on how effective or how impacting sound is on our psyche, on our being and our feelings?
I think because, you know, as I said, sound has such a powerful way of recalling memory.
Mm.
This is just pure speculation, but I mean, we start to hear when we're 16 weeks old in our mother's womb, and we hear through the medium of a fluid, amniotic fluid. You know, that's how we hear.
Mm.
And it was brought to my attention when I started using hydrophones and recording underwater, in seawater in particular, because it has that rich, harmonic, but relatively muted quality. You know, how you may imagine it sounds. And I think one reason may be why we think that the sounds of sea wash or the wind through leaves or rain on a roof or something that has a rich harmonic quality but isn't very dynamic is tranquil, in that we're harking back to a time when we were very tranquil.
Mm.
The time, you know, it's harking back to sounds that we might have heard before we were even born. But we remember, we have somewhere in our memory, those sounds are still there.
Which is interesting, because this brings me to my next question, actually, in relation to how you can take something from the natural environment and to the jungle of the city, that how do you compare or differentiate the two kinds of soundscapes, because they're very different from the wild native landscape to the urban landscape?
Yeah, that's a good question, but I'm just because I've been asked to do quite a few city sound workshops similar to this. First of all, the interesting thing was, you know, being asked to go and do things like this in Japan, in Germany, Berlin, Norway, in Britain, in the United States, in Spain, Italy. You know, there's a real thirst, and people all are quite interested. Well, people are very interested, actually, in their local soundscape.
Mm.
And for most of us, that means an urban soundscape.
Mm.
Most of us don't live in the countryside, you know.
Mm.
Hardly any of us live in the real sort of wild landscape.
Mm.
Most of us are in cities like Brussels, in the centre or on the edge. But people are really, like, you know, the words tuned city, starting to listen and become aware of their soundscape and environment.
Mm.
And one of the ways to do that, and one of the ways in becoming aware of what's around you, is recording it and playing it back and listening to it.
Mm.
And teaching yourself, which is possible to do, to become critically aware of the acoustics and your surroundings. Because I think, you know, we're bombarded so much by sound and noise. And we spend most of our time blocking that out. It's like negative energy.
Mm-hmm.
So no wonder we go home sort of frustrated and wound up and with headaches, you know, because you spend an awful lot of time not listening. You know, we hear everything, but we don't listen. You know, at the moment we're talking to each other and blocking out the background sounds we can hear of those trains, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It actually takes some effort to do that. Brain power, in other words, very sophisticated filtering and processing. If you sit back and listen and engage with the environment, you know, you're listening in a much more creative way, I think, which can be much more satisfying. But then you realise, you start to discriminate, and you realise that actually this room sounds dreadful, you know. And so you move somewhere else, or you change the furnishings, or you change your environment. And so it's not just sound. You know, when you start to think about acoustics, it then starts to become part of the whole picture.
Day 3, held at the Ritz. This day was a highly technical day where we looked at different microphones and different ways to use them and different technologies and softwares. This, to me, was very interesting, being a novice. I found the plethora of information incredibly interesting for somebody who would like to get into sound recording. My interest is mainly as a sound installationist. How to develop these different and new types of technologies. I found extremely useful. Wednesday evening, the students of the Ritz, I and Chris went out to the North Station at night to listen to Brussels at night, to capture the sounds of the city in the evening. It was about 7:30 where we met in the hall of Gare du Nord, or the North Station. Listening to the people at the last part of the rush hour slowly disappear. As we went up to the platform to capture the sounds of the trains into the evening. Even though we were in a group of quite a few people, you still feel a solitude, because when you put the headphones on, you're in a world of your own. It was an extremely calming experience.
What are the differentiating characteristics that you discovered of the soundscape of Brussels in comparison to other cities that you've been in and done work like this in?
Well, that's a good question. Several things struck me about Brussels. First of all was the bizarre similarity. So the first thing that, when I left London on Eurostar on Sunday evening, one of the last things I heard were groups of ringneck parakeets flying past King's Cross St Pancras Station. Mm-hmm. First thing I heard when I woke up in another country, you know, when I came to Belgium the following morning, were the same birds. Both sets of birds, the same species, have invaded our part of Europe because they've been released here. You know, they don't belong here. Mm-hmm. They've actually changed the soundscape of towns and cities in this part of Europe. But then, of course, the classic thing here is these really beautiful, narrow cobble streets. Are they clinkers? What do they call them?
Cobblestones,
yeah. And the sound of tyres on there, and the fact that the streets are relatively narrow. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you hear this rattling sound of tyres on these cobblestones and the associated acoustic of these narrow, very narrow streets. I really like that. Mm-hmm. But the thing that really caught my imagination, and it's because I'm working with it as well, are the sounds of the railway network here, which is what we sort of focused on with the workshop. Mm-hmm. Because there's such a great... It sounds really sort of schoolboyish, but because there's a great variety of trains here, it's fantastic, you know. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you've got the Eurostar and, you know, whatever it is, the Trans-Europe Express and all the, you know, a great collection of engines and tones and rhythms. And the stations here have really lovely acoustics as well. Mm-hmm. So I like that anyway. I love that immersive environment of... you know, also because I've been working with it a lot.
Yeah.
So it's one of the things we chose to work with on this course. Now, I've been really pleased with the outcomes.
Okay, great. What advice would you give to aspiring sound recorders in relation to their professional practices?
The best advice I would give people is get out there and get some experience doing it, recording it. As you've discovered this afternoon, you need experience, you know. And the only way you can do that, you can't do that, get that in a classroom reading about it or watching a film about it. You need to get out there, literally get out there, because it's hard enough operating things like that Sony handheld flashcard recorder you've got in this situation. You know, as you found out, yes. If you're not experienced, you go out in the street when it's dark, when it's raining, you're being jostled by a football crowd or drunks, or you're on a tram being thrown around, or wherever you are, on a train, and you're trying to record. It's really challenging. Mm. So what you need to do is get very familiar with your equipment so you can literally operate it blindfold or in the dark and have the confidence that when you come back and press play, there's going to be something there.
Yep.
But I think experience is the key, just getting to know the gear and handling it.
I've had my fill of trains for a while. To leave the platform. Because somebody's bringing me some Fritz and I'm absolutely bloody starving. And I don't want to miss the performances tonight. Good Belgian Fritz. You can't go wrong.
End of transmission. Find us on the internet, radio.fm. Over and out.